Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where everything we do starts with an alignment to Australia's first accredited standard of conflict-free advice, which ensures we are truly focused on helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, Jim Stackpool here from Certainty Advice Group. There's another podcast in our Certainty series where we always aim to help as many Australians as possible access really valuable advice, particularly in these times, to help them understand their next best financial steps when there's been never been more uncertainty in our lives thanks to COVID-19 and the unsettling effects not only on ourselves, our families, etc., but on the economies and globally. Our Certainty advisors all over Australia, like Paul Gilby, who I'm talking to today, are adhering to the nation's first standard of advice. It's a standard, basically, that ensures the advice will be comprehensive. We don't believe treating part of anyone's financial life is going to be effective without understanding of the whole of people's financial lives. And secondly, and really importantly, it's only remunerated by you. So in those situations in your life when you've got lots of different options, when potentially the consequences of making bad decisions might be large, and there might be some emotion attached or uncertainty attached, that's when you need advice, not more product recommendations. Because no matter how compliantly it might be provided to you, it may not be the best advice, whether product is needed or not. All our advisors, their advice is double-checked against standards so that whether you're dealing with a great firm like Highwood Partners, Paul Gilby's firm there in Subiaco, or you're dealing with another firm in Sydney, or you're dealing with a firm, no matter anywhere they may be in Australia, they adhere consistently to a standard but provide unique approach. Our topic today is 3 years on. It's the rise and fall, or fall, I should say, of advice since the Royal Commission was announced 3 years ago. If you take really back to the 27th of October 2016, you know, nearly 4 years ago, the Australia's corporate regulator, the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, ASIC, released a report at the time called Financial Advice Fees for No Service Report to address what it found. And it said at the time, Greg Medcalf, the head of ASIC at the time, said these were systemic failures, systemic, not bad eggs every now and again, but systemic failures on the part of Australia's financial institutions and financial advisors. But more interesting, you know, at the time, so back in October 2016, the time the report was released, the institutions have been found to be operating with these systemic failures, had agreed to some fee refunds back to Australians of about $23 million, nearly $24 million. And the report went on to say, it estimated this figure could even grow to the compensation back to Australians of about $178 million plus interest. However, now fast forward to today, for the Fees for No Service report was in some ways the foundation stone of the work of the Royal Commission headed by Justice Hayne. And the total compensation so far in terms of this, the Fees for No Service component is now up to $3 billion on the part of these financial institutions. They should have learnt the lesson when they're only getting fined $178 million. It grew then to $3 billion, which in fact doesn't include recent announcements of another $1.3 billion fine to Westpac alone for breaching anti-money laundering laws. Look, knowing these origins about the Royal Commission is important, particularly now to talk to Paul Gilby from Highwood Partners in Perth, to make sense of progress. So there's been lots of fines dished out, but what has really been the sense of progress and real benefits now to Australians as a consequence of going through and hopefully righting all these systemic issues? So Paul is his Certainty advisor, Highwood Partners in Subiaco. He and Julie, his partner, serve growing businesses, working families, pre and post retirees from all over Western Australia. Listen now particularly, in fact, why despite all the effort and the expense of the Royal Commission and time since, Paul actually doesn't believe there's been any winners, least of all Australians, unfortunately. Listen out also for what he believes consumers still need to do to lead better financial lives. But I started by asking Paul, what's been the benefit, Paul, for Australians 3 years on?
Look, Jim, I'm struggling to find any benefit, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I say that with a certain degree of almost a heavy heart, in that for all the blood, sweat and tears of the Royal Commission, you want to see some benefits, but I just can't see, you know, any real benefit to Australians from that Royal Commission.
Has anyone won out of the Royal Commission? Has anyone benefited out of it, apart from who it was intended for, the average Australian?
Oh, if you are someone who wants to be employed in a compliance role within the financial services industry, you are a clear winner. You have a guaranteed career path for the foreseeable future. But I'm being a little bit flippant there, but that's about as much as I can get in terms of a benefit to anyone.
Trying to get Australians giving access to better advice, trying to, you know, identify what has gone wrong, if anything, systemically within the banking and financial services sector, what it seems to have created over the last 3 years, in your opinion, is even harder path for consumers to navigate because their advisors have to themselves now navigate around more and more paperwork driven by the compliance industry.
Well, and there's so less numbers of advisors, obviously, they're leaving in droves. Whether that's that's probably not a pure Royal Commission reasoning that they're leaving, but
what do you think that's due? The number of advisors leaving the industry, it's got a net drop.
I think the educational requirements, the FASEA exams, all those things, and obviously part of the flow on from the Royal Commission. I think it's all just got too much for a lot of people, but certainly the education piece for a lot of the older guys that were having to do almost a bachelor's degree just to stay in the industry for another 5 years before they retired, you can understand that they're going to take their bat and ball and go.
And I sense from that comments we've lost a lot of babies in that bathwater. A lot of good talent has had to go because...
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very, very much so.
And is this just the inevitable path of change that sort of disrupted the video stores and the taxi drivers and others before it, or is this something different?
Oh, look, I think the industry was changing with or without a Royal Commission for a lot of reasons. But I think that some of the change that we're seeing is very much an overreaction to the problem that was needed to be solved. And I don't think the Royal Commission's helped helped us on that path.
And what was the problem that needed to be solved that I guess you hoped that the Royal Commission would address now 3 years on?
I think they need the clients, consumers, they needed to have a clear distinction between someone that was selling them a product and someone that was providing them advice. So the banks could have stayed in the industry provided they were very, very distinct in that we are not providing advice, we are selling you a product.
Mm-hmm.
And there was probably a marketplace for that. And probably a consumer that would have got value from that.
And someone listening to this might think they're still in that market. They're just withdrawn from the distribution through an advisory force and regrouping to come back with more financial technology offerings on your iPhone pretty time soon.
Possibly. Mm. I mean, yeah, let's face it, banks are there to make money.
No question. And we need great product. But you're saying that there's still this confusion between for the average Australian to understand when they're sitting in front of someone who maybe giving them pretty good advice from their perspective, but it turns out to be product or recommendation, product advice, as compared to when they sit in front of yourself or Julie at Highwood Partners and they're getting advice, regardless if there's any product attached or not. They still can't tell the difference.
No.
And so why do you think, or do you have any idea why Justice Hayne and the Commission, it cost $70 million evidently, didn't do that next step of separating advice from product?
Oh, I just think they got railroaded down a path. They went down a rabbit hole and never came back. And I think they also were getting some pretty big hits.
Yeah.
And so they didn't need to complete the circle and revisit some of the earlier questions because they'd gone down a rabbit hole, had some huge wins. Mm. And certainly, a couple of the higher profile people in the commission, not Hayne himself, but some of the two legal eagles, they've set themselves up very nicely on the back of that.
Yeah. And so you're saying that the wins there, all the banks virtually, all the banks have exited financial services, AMP lost chairman and CEOs. I think NAB lost CEO and a chairman too. They are wins from the Royal Commission?
I think the Royal Commission would have looked at them as a win. If I was sitting back from the Royal Commission side of the fence, they would have seen that as a win.
And would you say, if I was sitting with Australian consumer shoes on, would you say they're wins?
Not necessarily, no.
Mm. And so you've been surprised with the pace which the four banks have exited, AMP's been reconstructed, and we've now got this even greater wave of industry, new compliance industry being built. Are you surprised by the pace of that change?
I'm not surprised. I think, you know, once the banks saw the writing on the wall and thought, let's get out of here, this is just, you know, like, to be perfectly honest, the banks would have said it's too hard. Mm. We can't make the sort of money we want to make. We can't hit our thresholds in terms of return on capital. Let's go back and become banks and we'll live to fight another day.
And what's the effect of COVID-19 on all this? This most extraordinary global event everyone's been thrust into. What's it done for this pace of reformation in financial services? You know, from what are you hearing from your clients, and what do you perceive is going to be the different effect of this pace of change in the industry?
I think COVID has made us embrace technology quicker than we may have previously. Mm-hmm. It's certainly brought technology to the forefront of our thinking in terms of how we operate, how we can create efficiencies. And it's probably given us a little bit more confidence in some of the technology pieces, in that we had to use them while we were, you know, working from home or lockdown or whatever you want to call it. By necessity, we had to use them, and we've suddenly become a bit more confident in them and more willing to embrace them. And that's not only us as advisors, but also clients as well.
Yeah, and so I guess drawing the line from that, you're saying your clients can still get access to good advice. They're still getting a service, and we've all adapted to ensure whether we can go face-to-face or not, that your clients can still get assured from yourself and Julie there at Highwood Partners that they're still on their best possible path for their own financial futures, getting the advice that Highwood's good at. It's the whole uncertainty about new global economies, new paradigms being thrown upon us. People can't travel. Certain industries have been decimated. Others are probably booming. Have you picked up any of the new paradigms or significant changes from your client's life as a consequence of these COVID-inspired changes?
I think just the main thing we're picking up is probably the increased economic uncertainty. Especially, you know, retirees, and we're in an environment with very low interest rates, and obviously the dividend income that has sort of offset those low interest rates for a lot of years has dried up to a certain degree. Whether that's something that's going to last for a longer period of time than we would hope would and could have a big impact on a lot of retirees' income.
Yeah, but in terms of how you can still operate to still support your clients and still giving them the reassurance and the confidence that, yep, knowing what we know now, they're still getting, whilst there's a bit more uncertainty, yes, that's in fact why they're paying you and Julie.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we're still here. We're a telephone call away, a Zoom meeting away. We're ramping up our use of, you know, social media to communicate with clients and things like that. So we're just making sure that we're still very much readily available to our clients.
Yeah, okay.
If and when they need them, but, you know.
3 years on, we haven't seen significant benefits flowing through unless it's those employed in the industry are now trying to get their heads around and deliver on compliance regimes, which has increased the red tape, which has probably made advice less affordable for more and more Australians.
Yep.
The Royal Commission itself got its headlines and probably returned on the $70 million it cost to run the event, with some of the big headlines and fundamental changes in some of the biggest companies in Australia. What's going to happen in 3 years' time for get closer to what I think you and Julie are seeking, which is more and more Australians understanding the difference when they're sitting in front of you and Julie getting pure advice, or when they're sitting in front of someone who might be getting a product recommendation masquerading as advice? What's got to change still to come to help get closer and closer to that time?
Oh, I think they need to, you know, the old general advice versus personal advice, it probably needs to go and have a demarcation between if you're providing advice or you're selling a product. And then, you know, these advisors or organisations that are really just there to push product have to disclose that, and so, you know, or not package it up under the proviso of advice.
It's a bit like cigarette packs. Let's be quite clear with the labelling.
Yeah.
This is a recommendation, like you're buying a Toyota. This is what sort of particular Toyota.
I was going to say, you walk into a car yard, you're not being provided advice, you are being sold a product. You know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with selling a product, provided the consumer is fully aware of what the process is.
Yeah, I think it comes back to your point, is that when clients come and sit in front of you and Julie, they've got lots of options. The consequences of making a bad decision could be quite vital for them. and usually is.
Yes.
And quite often sometimes that decision is also clouded by emotion of people wanting different things and how important those things are to them. And so in those circumstances, when options are many, consequences are big and emotions might be high, if you're getting a product recommendation, that's a very, very different scenario if you're getting pure advice.
Very much so.
Yeah. And so you're suggesting then that by better labeling, this is great product advice and it's a really good product and there's nothing wrong with it. And it's as compared to what you get from Highwood Partners, which is pure advice, the labeling of that needs to be clearer in 3 years' time for more Australians to see the value and just understand who they're dealing with.
Well, yeah, if you want to call it labeling, but we have to somehow have the consumers out there understanding what it is they're receiving.
There you have it, Paul Gilbey from Highwood Partners in Subiaco in Perth. What did you take away from that? You know, I took a few things. Paul, in fact, isn't surprised that bureaucracy, and probably not to be, I guess, as he's saying, surprised, just making advice in the short term, well, maybe not short term, for the last 3 years, even harder, more expensive and more out of reach, therefore, for Australians. Although politically, he did say it's probably seen as a win. It made some real change. Some chair people and CEOs were moved on. Banks have all exited the distribution of financial advice. But from the sense Australians' perspective, those walking in the Australian shoes who are seeking great advice, particularly in these times of COVID, no real value yet. He does suggest, though, this labelling of advice, in some ways maybe picking up what we've picked up from cigarette packaging. So that product advice, as he says, has a very clear role. It's very important, as you would if you're visiting a Toyota dealership. But when those three things, that the consequences of getting the financial decision wrong, when there are many options facing you as to which way you might go with your financial life and decisions in front of you, and sometimes also when emotions and might also be playing a big part in your life about what you wanted to achieve. When you've got those three factors, consequences are high, emotions are strong, and options are many, that's when you need to seek out a firm like Highwood Partners in Perth who are only getting paid and only you will only pay a dollar amount that you value based upon the advice, not attached to any product associated with it all. So there you have it, Paul Gilbey from Highwood Partners in Subiaco and with partner Julie representing what I believe is the new brand of advisor in Australia. Love to get your feedback and please never make that mistake that an advisor's product or effort may be valuable for you when you've got consequences are high, options are many, and there might be some emotions attached to the financial decisions you need to make. Jim Stackwell signing out. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Certainty Advice Podcast with Jim Stackpool. To access the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, head on over to certaintyadvicegroup.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. certaintyadvicegroup.com.